Hello and welcome to the Raptor Show, powered by DoorDash on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm your host, Wim Liu. I will be joined in the first segment soon by the Sports Joe Wolfond, where we will discuss the hottest topic in the NBA right now, which is DeMar DeRozan. And it's really awesome right now that he's getting all this credit. He's having a fantastic season, just became the first player to hit back-to-back game winners. Definitely going to be the only player ever really to hit back-to-back game winners in different years. And, you know, we will talk to Wolfond about this from the Raptors' perspective, because I think later in the show we will talk to Trey Kirby as well, from the No Dunks podcast, and get his perspective as a Bulls fan. But as a Raptors fan, I mean, we're always going to be on the lookout for what DeMar's doing, for what Kyle is doing. You know, I'm sure a lot of people are tracking what JV is doing with the Pelicans. But I think DeMar in particular, like, he's just had this sort of like unfinished kind of business, at least with Raptors fans, because at least with Kyle, we got to see him reach the pinnacle, you know, go through all this. Even the year after, he was fantastic, you know, all of that stuff. With DeMar, he was great here, and then he was moved right before the Raptors had their best success, almost directly contributed to that front. So it's kind of this bittersweet feeling. So for, I think, a lot of Raptor fans, especially when you look on the timeline, people are just so happy for DeMar. And yeah, Wolfond, let's just start here. Do you think DeMar's game has changed since he's left Toronto? Because the more I watch DeMar this year on the Bulls, I'm like, that's exactly the DeMar DeRozan that I remember. But in the sense that in the way he operates, but he seems to have gotten so much better at being himself.
Yeah, I think that's just it. I don't think the broad strokes of his game have changed much at all. I think he's just sort of gotten a whole lot better at painting those strokes, you know, and like every element of his game is more refined. His, like, the mastery of his craft is so much more confident and polished. And I just think, you know, there's definitely something to be said for that, right? For just sort of DeMar has always been a super hard worker. We know that, right? But I don't think he's ever tried to turn himself into something that he wasn't or didn't feel like he wanted to be. Like, I think he's mostly just worked hard on taking the aspects of his game that that he was already good at and just, like, taking them incrementally, like, to a higher and higher level. And, you know, that's not to say that, like, he hasn't, like, if you look at what he was when he came into the league, obviously he's added, like, there's been so much skill development in terms of his handle, his jump shooting, his playmaking, like, all those things are there that weren't there before. But it's not like he's had to completely reinvent himself over the last few years. It's more so just like kind of layering different skills on top of the ones that he's already built in, and then slowly but surely refining those skills to the point that, like, he just seems to be in complete control of his game right now and know exactly what he wants to do, and is, you know, now able to execute those things at a ridiculously high level.
Yeah, exactly. And I love the artist analogy you use. You know, I don't think Van Gogh would start sculpting just because, you know, sculptures are more in vogue right now. DeMar is just stuck to himself. It's actually really beautiful to see him at 32. Look, a lot of people at 32, you know, a decade plus into their careers, having a very successful career, there's not necessarily the need to change. And I feel like in Toronto, at least when he was earlier in his career, because we saw him obviously when he was drafted, him growing up here and everything like that, like, there was always so much talk of, like, okay, if DeMar could add this, if DeMar could add this, if he could just do this and do this and do this. And, like, it's been almost kind of nice and peaceful to see him since going to San Antonio, where Pop was like, look, we're going to need you to be the point guard, which you were already kind of doing with Toronto. But other than that, just keep doing what you're doing. You know, here at San Antonio, we don't really shoot threes, so you just keep doing what you're doing. And he just got so good at it. I mean, like, I'm not sure how many guards in the history of the NBA are as efficient shooting two-point shots as DeMar DeRozan has been the last 3 years, especially considering they're not just, like, layups. They're not even, like, short jumpers from, like, 3 to 10 feet. We're talking about long mid-range twos, which is a lot of what DeMar takes, as we all know. And the last 3 years for DeMar DeRozan on very high volume, like, roughly 15 shots per game, 54% from two-point range in the first, the second year went to San Antonio, then 51%, this year 51% as well. That's outrageous for a shooting guard and for the types of shots that he takes. And I don't know, for you, like, seeing it from afar, like, are you almost seeing, like, a different side of DeMar because this is, like, a reflection of team construction? Like, he's playing in different sort of environments? Or do you see it as almost, like, I don't know, he's just, like, gotten so good at what he does that it might not necessarily matter who's on the floor with him?
I think it's both. Like, I think the offensive and defensive environments are sort of perfect for him where he's at. Mm. And, you know...
Well, what do you mean by that?
Like... Well, okay, so let's look at it at like the offensive side of things, right? I think playing with a stretch big like Vucevic has been really good for him. Like, those two have developed a pretty nice pick and pop chemistry. DeMar's gotten really good at making sort of that like behind the back pass, like out of the pick and pop to hit Vuce above the break. And obviously that, like, there are times you can watch him run a pick and roll with, say, Derrick Jones Jr., right? And it just, unless Derrick Jones is like rolling hard to the rim, which he does sometimes, but there are also times he kind of just like drifts after setting the screen. And then you'll see it's like both defenders go with DeMar and there's no advantage created there. But I think, you know, playing with the stretch big, it's like the defense has to account for both of those threats. And also you can kind of just have Vooch spotting up above the break off of the ball, and that's creating more space for DeMar to operate in the mid range. And then, like, okay, so obviously, you know, Kyle Lowry at his peak, I think, was a better player than Zach LaVine is right now, but in a much different way. Like, Lowry was never anywhere near the kind of scoring threat that Zach LaVine is. So if you think about how, like, an opposing defense is going to game plan for the Bulls, well, there aren't many teams that have, like, two lockdown perimeter stoppers, you know, that are going to be able to handle both of those assignments. So you kind of have to pick your poison, right? And a lot, it doesn't even really matter which of those guys you decide to stick your best perimeter defender on, because those two actually can run the two-man game pretty effectively as well. I think, I mean, one thing we saw in Toronto, right, is like DeMar is really good at running the small pick and roll game. Yeah. And so a lot of the time, like, you'll have him running pick and pop with LaVine. LaVine's like gotten really good at ghosting that screen and just like jetting above the arc. That can be really effective. And if the opposing team is, say, sticking its weaker perimeter defender on LaVine, then, like, you can kind of just generate that switch, or you're getting two on the ball and LaVine's popping open. Like, there are just so many weapons. And even, like Lonzo and Caruso are the two weakest offensive players in that starting lineup, and they can still be threats. Like, most of the time, the opponent's going to hide its weakest defender on Caruso because he is the worst offensive player in that starting lineup. But the Bulls just counter that basically, like, they'll run DeMar Caruso pick and roll. So the defense has to decide, okay, do you want to switch that weaker defender onto DeMar, or do you want to throw two on the ball? And then Caruso, like, he'll roll into the middle of the floor, and he's a good playmaker who can spray passes out from the middle. And it's like, you just, they're just like a lot of different ways that they can attack. And all of them basically provide good options, I think, for DeMar to do his thing. So offensively, I think that's been really beneficial for him. And defensively, he's just insulated in a way that I don't think he ever really has been before. I mean, a lot of those Raptors teams were quite good defensively. I think his last season there, 2017-18, they were fifth in defensive efficiency. Obviously, that completely fell apart in the playoffs, but, like, during the regular season, they were a really good defensive team. And I think, you know, Caruso, Lonzo, those guys are not only, like, taking the toughest one-on-one assignments, but they're also really good help defenders. And the Bulls just sort of use them as their primary helpers. Like, those guys are roving, and they're getting in passing lanes, and they have kind of license to freelance and help and recover as they see fit. And that's just allowing both DeMar and LaVine, I think, to kind of focus on, like, their one-on-one assignments and not have to do too much in terms of their responsibilities away from the ball, which I think is where DeMar is weakest. So I just think he's in a really good situation that has allowed his game to flourish. But it is both, right? Like, it's not, like, it is also the fact that he has taken his game to new heights. And so, like, those two things are sort of working in concert right now to produce the season that he's having.
Yeah, and, you know, honestly, every conversation with DeMar, I can't help but, like, think back to Toronto era and sort of, like, compare it as just kind of you did. And, like, the Raptors just never kind of surrounded him with this much shooting, right? Like, I think right now, JV's improved a lot as a shooter, but, you know, last time JV and DeMar played together, like, JV was not as good of a shooter as Vucevic is, as you mentioned. And then you just think about, like, the random threes that the Raptors used to always put beside Kyle and DeMar. Obviously, DeMar is not going to shoot the three that much, although this season he is hitting 36%, but he's taking two threes per game. So what does that really mean? But, like, you need to have just a lot of shooting around them at the three and the four positions to sort of really give him the space to operate, because he's always been a fantastic one-on-one player. As you mentioned, he's gone better and better at that, to the point where, I mean, some of the shots he's making right now are just absurd. But, yeah, they just, you know, whether it's like, it's not the same. I mean, kicking to Patrick Patterson or kicking it to Damari Carroll or even PJ Tucker in the later years or Serge Ibaka or Pascal when he was a sophomore, like, it's just not the same. It really is not the same. And a lot of these other guys, like, when you're kicking it out to Caruso, yeah, I mean, like, he's only a 36% three-point shooter, but as you mentioned, he's really smart. He can make another move. He can attack. He can put it on the floor. Same thing with Lonzo. Lonzo's also just shooting the ball amazing. 7.4 three-point attempts per game this season, shooting 41%. So it's just very hard to guard this Bulls team. And I remember you and I having a conversation at the start of the year on Pound the Rock, where I picked the Bulls as one of the most interesting teams to me, because I was like, it feels like, to me, they've clearly constructed a very good offensive team, but, like, defensively, it felt like they had punted it, because you look at the individual defenders, and yeah, Lonzo's a good individual defender. Caruso clearly is a very good one as well. But, like, aside from that, there's just weak spots, but they've just made it work. And to me, when I look at the numbers, the only thing that really stands out is that they do a really good job getting back in transition and then not turning the ball over, things like that, stopping the ball, DeMar. And I think that's where DeMar actually, if you think about his defensive contribution, not really trying to gas up his defense, we all know what it is, but he stops the ball a lot because he's shooting a lot of free throws. He's making a lot of shots. He's taking a lot of short jumpers that don't spray way out when you shoot a three, for example. And he doesn't turn the ball over. So you're just going to limit how much transition you're giving up if you're playing a lot of your offense through DeMar, which I think does also help the Bulls' defense. I mean, I think if you get the Bulls in a half-court setting, you could probably score on them. But the fact that they just don't allow many transition opportunities is like a huge part of their defensive success as well. So you got to give DeMar a lot of credit, which I think at this point, DeMar has to be – what do you think? Is DeMar in your starting all-star backcourt for the Eastern Conference?
It's funny. I was actually recently just sort of trying to game this out. And like – just on merit, if you were just picking sort of like the top five players in the East so far this year, then yeah, undoubtedly, I think he would be in there. Mm-hmm. And I kind of wound up not putting him in the starting five just because I felt like there were too many guards that I felt like I needed to cram onto the East roster. And okay. So I had to make DeMar a front court player. And then
Which is totally plausible, by the way, based on how many guards the Bulls play. Like he guards power forwards. Regularly.
Yeah, and think about how many of his minutes he's playing next to LaVine and one or both of Lonzo and Caruso. So I think that's totally fair. And then I'm looking at it, I'm like, I don't think I can put him in there ahead of Embiid, and I certainly can't put him ahead of Giannis or KD. So I wound up doing it that way and then having him come off the bench. But I think if we were doing it like apositionally and just picking the five best guys in the East so far this year, then yeah, he would be in the starting lineup.
Okay, this is very interesting, because I wanted to get in this conversation as well about just Fred VanVleet and his potential case to make the All-Star game. Obviously, it's going to be very difficult. To be honest, the East is better than the West this year. There seems to be a lot of depth, especially at guards, to sort of pick from. I kind of just assumed that you were going to start DeMar as one of the guard positions, but now that you've essentially cheated to have him in the front court, which I totally am fine with, that actually opens up another guard spot, I guess, technically, to fit on the team. So who did you end up having as your all-star guard starters? I'm assuming Jimmy Butler?
No, I had Butler also as a front court player sake of getting more guards onto the team. So
okay,
he's also coming off the bench as a front court guy. My guard starters are Trae Young and Fred VanVleet.
Wow. Okay, so you clearly agree that Fred is in the all-star case. So I think... I'm curious to hear from you, like, what is your specific case for Fred making the All-Star game? Because obviously the competition is hard. Like, just to include some of the other, you know, players in the mix, and based on your roster, it seems like you have maybe like eight guards on the team, which is totally fine by me. It's an All-Star game. I want to see as many guards as possible, plus Giannis catching lobs and stuff. But you're talking about Fred VanVleet, Drew Holiday, Trae Young, Bradley Beal, Darius Garland, LaMelo Ball, James Harden, Zach LaVine, DeMar DeRozan. I guess he's technically a front court player in this exercise. So, you know, it's not clear cut that Fred will make it, but you even have him as a starter. So what's your case for him starting, actually?
I mean, it's pretty simple. Like, he's just been unbelievable on both sides of the ball. And, like, I don't know, try and poke holes in any element of his game. Like, in the past, you could point to the two-point scoring. Like, for a long time, he was kind of just a one-level scorer. He's always had the three ball, obviously, but then he didn't have an in-between game. He couldn't finish at the rim, and that's not been the case at all this year. Like, that his development as an inside-the-arc scorer has been insane. Like, if you look at even just 2 years ago, he was at 51% at the rim and 26% on non-rim two-pointers. And this year, he's up to 60% at the rim and 43% on non-rim two-pointers, including 55% on long twos, basically like twos outside the painted area. So, like, he's a knockdown mid-range jump shooter. He's actually finishing effectively at the rim. He's still knocking down 40% of his threes, and he's taking like 9 of them per game. And by the way, if you take out, like, I know, like, the pull-up threes have been an important development for him, but he's still not all that good at shooting them. So maybe that's, like, he's at 32% on pull-up threes. So maybe that's a hole that you could poke, is, like, he's a lead guard and he's not an elite pull-up three-point shooter. He's at 48% on catch-and-shoot threes. Like, man, this dude is absolutely ridiculous. And then you tack on, like, the vastly improved playmaking. Like, he's a legit lead guard to me at this point in terms of, like, the way that he can orchestrate the pick and roll. And I think it would look a lot better even if he had, like, more capable play finishers around him and, like, really, you know, really effective role man, for instance, would, I think, make that playmaking pop even more. But I just think he's gotten, like, better, more patient as a playmaker. Like, his vision has improved. All of that has been there on the offensive side. And then he, to me, is, like, still, like, as he has been the last couple of years, like, right up there among the best point of attack defenders in the league. Like, one of, if not the very best screen navigators in the league in terms of just, like, knowing when to get skinny, like, getting over top, really hard to screen. And that's, like, I think such an underappreciated skill in today's NBA, like, given how pick and roll heavy all offense tends to be. Like, if you have a guy who can consistently, like, get over screens and, like, stay out of switches and stay in contact with the ball handler and, like, force them off of the arc and, like, kind of get them into that no man's land in the middle of the floor, like, that's really, really effective. And that's not even mentioning what Fred can do as a help defender, like a guy who digs down into the post and into driving lanes as well as anybody, has those heavy hands, you know, his ability to kind of swipe at the ball and come up with deflections and steals. Like, I think he's just a monster at the defensive end of the floor. And then if you just look at, I mean, the impact numbers are completely off the charts. His on-off differential, if you use, like, the cleaning the glass filter that strips out garbage time, Raps are 21.4 points per 100 possessions better with him on the floor than on the bench. And that's second in the league only to Jokic so far this season. And I know, you know, you don't want to necessarily, like, reward him for the fact that the team sucks when he's not out there. Like, that's not something that he can control. But it does go to show, like, the Raptors are, you know, they've dealt with some adversity, obviously, like a ton of COVID absences, injury absences to Pascal and OG as well. And he has basically kept them afloat. Like, he is what is driving that team, like, to the extent that you could call it success. They're a 500 team. Like, they are a 500 team because of him. Like, they completely fall apart when he's not out there at both ends of the floor. And I just think he deserves it, man. Like, he's not going to start. I know that. So that's fine. But I think if I were constructing these teams, and again, if positions weren't a factor, I would put DeMar ahead of him. I do think DeMar has been better. But the way that I kind of gamed it out in order to get as many guards as I possibly could onto the team, I did wind up having him as my second starter.
No, I'm really in favor of the strategic way you've constructed the team. Because honestly, like, you know, the forward depth it's decent, but, like, you're, like, really trying to say, like, okay, Jason Tatum's having a, like, he's not even having a great year really by his standards. Like, you know, are we really just kind of try to stick to forward so that we can get all these guys in? Like, no, just load the team with guards, because the East has been really great because of the fact that they've had really great guards, and also because they have Embiid and Giannis and KD. By the way, this is like the most, this is like the least advanced. This is like anti-cleaning the glass. This is like, you know, I don't know, glass residue. But if you just look at raw plus minus, okay, Fred VanVleet is 28th in the NBA in raw plus minus. He's plus 145 this season. The next closest Raptor is Pascal at plus 62 or Gary Trent at plus 61. They're about 90 in the league. There's no reason for an under 500 team to have a guy who's plus 145. And the thing is like, it's not just necessarily, okay, you know what? We all know that part of what goes on in terms of, you know, on-off ratings is like, who is your backup? And the Raptors have not had a backup point guard who you can consistently turn to, whether that's Delano or Malachi. But at the same time, like, as you mentioned, Fred is doing all these things on the floor. And I guess the only thing for me I wish is just like his box score numbers were just slightly more inflated. Like, it's not like there's nothing wrong with what he's doing, like, numbers-wise. But I think if someone was sort of just doing a more cursory look at this thing, you look at, okay, so 21 points per game, 5 rebounds, you know, 6.7 assists, 1.6 steals. That's definitely all-star caliber. But I think they might look at someone else. Like, even like Bradley Beal, for example, might have more inflated numbers than what you would see from Fred, even though Bradley's had a, you know, a down year for his standards. So, but yeah, Fred's in my team, absolutely. And when you consider the competition that he's facing, it's pretty tough. I'm really curious, two things from you, Wolfman, before we go. One, who else is in your All-Star guard conversation right now on your team of 8 guards?
So Trey and Fred starting off the bench, mm-hmm. The two guard spots I had, Harden and Darius Garland. I think Garland's been so good for that Cavs team. And I wound up, I think Jared Allen was like my first and maybe toughest cut, because I think he's been incredible as well and definitely has a case. But I think without Garland, I understand like the team's been driven by its defense, and that defense has been anchored by Allen and Mobley. But none of that matters and none of that works if you don't have a drink stirrer like Garland to make everything mm-hmm. work at the offensive end of the floor. And especially with them losing all the other guard depth that they had, you know, losing Sexton early in the season and now losing Rubio, like
they got Rondo. It's all good.
Yeah, they'll be fine. It's completely up to Garland to make that offense work. And it's like, yeah, the offense hasn't been great. It's been below average. But like the fact that it's been even in the top 20 is remarkable, given the fact that they just don't really have many other ball handlers on the team. And he's done it at such a high level in terms of like his pull-up 3-point shooting, his in-between game, like his floater is so money. And I love the way he sort of uses the threat of that floater to disguise the lobs to Allen. Like their pick and roll mm-hmm. combination has gotten really, really effective. And he's done a really good job running like the double drag action with both Allen and Mobley in there. Like, I just think he's been awesome. He's such a good passer too. Like obviously he doesn't bring the defensive value that Fred does, but that's sort of what sets Fred apart as a point guard is like most other point guards in the league aren't good defenders. And that's why I think Fred really like deserves the credit, and deserves to start, because he is like a rare breed in that sense. But, I don't hold Garland's defense against him for that reason, just because I don't think that's really what's expected of point guards around the league in this day and age. But I had him and Harden there, and then I had two more guards in my wild card spots in Zach LaVine and Drew Holiday, with LaMelo like just barely missing out, because I think he's got a pretty strong case as well.
Yeah, and I would love to see LaMelo at the game, because I think his game is like purely designed really to really be showcased at an all-star setting, which brings me to my last question from Asad at Swar Lasers on Twitter. You know him from this podcast as well as the slander expert. What he asked, what would Fred actually be doing in an all-star game? Because I think we ran into this issue with Kyle at all-star games too, because he wasn't really doing much. And we saw him take some charges in the most recent all-star game he played in, which was hugely entertaining. But what would Fred be doing? Is he going to be showing the heavy hands? Is he going to be stripping Karl-Anthony Towns under the basket and then pushing it ahead for a fast break? Like, what are we seeing from Fred in an All-Star game?
Yeah, that's what you'd hope, man. And I know, like, people were, you know, not thrilled with Lowry's performance in his most recent All-Star appearance because
not me,
like,
I was thrilled. I was in Mexico on vacation and I was like, no, hold on, babe, we gotta pause our vacation. I gotta watch Kyle take charges in the fourth quarter. He was one of the 10 best players in the league on the floor, which is, you know, I mean, come on, that was pretty amazing. He was one of the most memorable moments of that game.
Yeah. Yeah, so here's my thing about the All-Star game, and I've said this on Pound the Rock before, and Cash was shocked when I said it, but basically, I have never once in my entire life watched an entire All-Star game start to finish. I just find them so boring and awful to watch. I just don't care, and it's like, they treat it as an exhibition, and yeah, you'll see some, like, cool alley-oops and guys pulling up from 35 feet, and like, okay, great, like, rack up 170 points. It just doesn't do it for me. But I'll tune in like usually for a few minutes and just like to get a sense of the game. And that's usually enough for me. I've always been a proponent of like, yeah, man, throw one of these scrappers into the game. Like somebody who's actually going to treat it like a real game, like throw Fred VanVleet in there to just like get up in guys' airspace. And like, you know what? No, like you're not going to like just step into this 30 footer. You're not going to just toss this alley-oop from half court. Like I'm going to be right up underneath you. Like, messing up your dribble, stealing the ball, taking a charge. I think that's what the game needs in a lot of cases. Yeah. And I feel like, again, like I didn't watch that All-Star game where Lowry was doing Lowry things. I was on my honeymoon, but I'm just kind of watching the highlights afterwards.
I guess Kyle's
and,
not
like,
that important to you, huh?
Yeah, clearly not. Yeah, but just like watching the highlights afterwards and like sifting through the discourse, I feel like, I think that's great for the All-Star game, man. Like, more shenanigans, like, like more guys taking it way too seriously, but also like having fun with it at the same time. I just think that's perfect. So I would hope that that's what we would see Fred doing in the game, is just all manner of Fred things.
By the way, I was going to say the last person Steph wants to see in the All-Star game is Fred. I mean, I know it's not East West specifically, but I want to see them on opposite teams. I want to see a box for one with Fred.
Right.
In the
well, don't game, so. Yeah, it's like captains who draft their teams now, right? And so I bet Steph will probably be one of the captains because goes by like the top.
He should take
the
Fred
top two vote getters. Yeah, there you go. Just that would be perfect.
All right, Wolfon, thank you so much for joining us once again on the program. You know, listen to Pound the Rock. You and Cash do an amazing job, and for us, that takes. We're going to take a break right here. I'm your host, Will Liu, and you're listening to The Raptor Show, powered by DoorDash on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, when we come back, we'll be joined by Alex, we'll be joined by another special guest, and we will talk more about DeMar DeRozan. Welcome back to The Raptor Show, powered by DoorDash on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm your host, Wim Liu, and as I promised before the break, I am joined by my producer and co-host, Alex Wong, on a rare Tuesday appearance on his own show. Alex, what's going on?
What's up, man? Blake Murphy was busy this week, so hopefully...
Oh, but they were still cleaning the glass. The glass was still clean even without him, so...
Well, you know. Yeah, I DM'd you because we need a cleaning the glass reference every Tuesday. And shouts to Joe Wolfon, very respected basketball mind. You know, I respect him a lot, but I gotta call him out, man. This guy talking about the All-Star game, saying he wants more scrappy guys in there. This guy said no alley-oops, no look passes. This guy wants LeBron James in a triple threat position guarded by Patrick Beverley. This is what he wants at the All-Star game. What is wrong with you, Joe Wolfon? Otherwise,
come on. His favorite player is T.J. McConnell, so
you know,
he probably wants T.J. McConnell as another guard if he wasn't hurt this year.
Man, we're going to run out of guests to book if we keep roasting them right after they make time to come on air.
He's not listening. It's all
good. No, he's he's a new father, so he's got way more important things than listening to an entire hour about the Raptors and former Raptors. So before we continue on, wanted to mention, so the Raptors are playing the San Antonio Spurs at home tonight. Once again, one of the biggest games in recent franchise history as they try to get back to the 500 mark. Utah Watanabe and Zvi Mihailuk are both out. They have entered health and safety protocols. So the Raptors were basically fully healthy last game, and now they're not again, Will?
Yeah, it's what you expect from the season. I think it's, in terms of guys going into the protocols, I mean, it's sort of like everyone's going to get a turn eventually. And hopefully you just hope it's just one turn. But yeah, I feel bad for these guys. You know, like Utah, remember the interviews with Utah after that Cleveland game, which was a sham. And they were asking Utah, like, hey, how did you spend New Year's or how did you spend Christmas? And he's like, yeah, I was alone in my hotel room and I ordered ramen to my house or to my hotel, I guess. So like that's how these guys have been living, trying to avoid this thing. And yet it'll come for us all. I mean, literally, as I said yesterday on the show, I've left my house once in the last week to literally go get a booster shot. And in probably waiting in line for the booster, that's probably where I got COVID because I literally haven't gone anywhere else. So it's just going to come for everybody. I think so far the only player who hasn't gotten COVID yet is Chris Boucher. So maybe the solution is we got to eat more Mary Browns.
Yeah, no, I'm haunted by trying to make small talk with you yesterday, and you literally just replied with, yeah, I tested positive. So I'm not doing small talk until next Monday. I'm retiring that for exactly 1 week. So the Raptors also announced yesterday, because there were obviously a bunch of games that were postponed during the last couple of weeks. So a series of games have been rescheduled, including the two games against the Chicago Bulls that were postponed in December. But most importantly, Kyle Lowry's return to Toronto has been moved because of all this reshuffling from February 3rd to February 1st. So, I mean, usually here's what I say, you know, to fans who have tickets to the game, make sure you make a note. But, Will, I don't think there's going to be fans of the game, and I'm suggesting that we bring back Zoom fans for one night. Like, I want to see your face at midcourt.
I mean, I could still go to the game as media. I might actually, you know, assuming I'm out of health and safety protocols by then, like, I might actually go for Kyle, to be honest. So right. I could just be there. That's what
breaking
I'm trying to say.
News.
Do you
where
want to be there?
Will
you have a media pass too.
Where will Will be on February 1st? He will be heating up hot dogs by himself in the 100s.
Oh, you're not coming?
Sitting right next to... I don't know, man. Let me see if I can
Bro,
find a hazmat
suit. You can just walk
suit.
To the arena.
Yeah, I know I can walk to the arena. I can walk to anywhere right now, but do I want to? That's a different question. So anyways, wanted to continue. Love the conversation with Joe Wolf on in the first segment about DeMar DeRozan. But if we're going to talk about DeMar DeRozan and the Bulls, we have to bring on Trey Kirby from the No Dunks podcast at The Athletic. Trey is on the line with us right now. Trey, the Bulls are back.
Hey, the Bulls are 100% back. Tomorrow, I don't know if you guys know this, is actually the one-year anniversary of the Bulls being back. And after the previous 4 years, you know, it's been a great start to 2022 for Chicago. I forgot what it's like for a team to be in any other place besides first. So off to a banger in Chicago.
Wow.
Yeah. The Bulls have won 8 straight. They're obviously the number one seed right now in the East. DeMar DeRozan with the back-to-back buzzer beaters. He was named Eastern Conference Player of the Week yesterday. Trey, tell me about this one-year anniversary of the Bulls being back.
Well, I'm a sicko, you know, so I will watch every single Bulls game. They always go on a West Coast trip at the beginning of the season. This year it was because Genesis had a concert at the United Center. It's usually a circus trip, but it was Genesis this year. A lot of Phil Collins fans in Chicago. Nonetheless, they were playing in Portland last year, January 5, 2021. Got down big against the Blazers. I think they were down by 21 in the first half. Ended up coming back and winning it. Zach LaVine hit a big step-back jumper late in the fourth quarter that was kind of like the ceiling moment. And that, for me, was the first time that I realized that this Bulls team, with new leadership in the front office, with Billy Donovan as the coach, and with Zach LaVine really embracing starhood, if you will, that this is a team that looked a little bit different, looked a little bit more professional, and looked like they weren't going to be a punching bag in the Eastern Conference and amongst my Raptor-loving co-workers as well. So, yeah, the Bulls have been a joke for a while after we moved down to the States. So to see them start to turn it around a little bit last year, that's when I thought they were first back. People were having a laugh, of course, when they didn't make the play-in tournament last year, but over the summer, some more great moves by Arturis Karnišević, and things have worked out on the court for the Bulls this season, obviously.
Hey, Trey, listen, before we get on to more positive times, because obviously there's a lot of positive times, I just have to ask you, do you have a favorite Jim Boylan memory? Just of the more recent dark times from the Bulls, because I remember very distinctly there's a game in Toronto where it was maybe like in the last minute, the Raptors are up 20. I think Terrence Davis might have had 30 points in that game, something ridiculous. And then Jim Boylan made sure to take an extra timeout in the last minute to drop a play. And I just remember thinking, wow, this guy looks like an egg and is definitely an egghead. So, do you have a favorite Jim Boylan memory?
I certainly remember that moment. I'm not totally sure, but he might have been running a play for Adam Makoka, because that's what you do in the last minute.
There's no way that's a real person. No way.
Hey, his jersey is still available in the Bulls team store right now. Thank you very much. Rocking Alex Caruso's number 6. But for me, yeah, I remember that moment so well. I think Jack was laughing at the Bulls on the broadcast. And like I'm saying, they were a joke for a while. My personal favorite Boylan era memory is that he had a literal punch clock installed in the team's practice facility. Like, you can come in and like scan in for overtime like you're working at a factory. I've been trying to track down my own vintage punch clock for the jokes, but yeah, for me, when Boylan was the head guy, it was more like the Bulls were a high school basketball team with the way he was motivating them. Couldn't even win state, though, the couple of years he was there. So, kind of a bummer.
Jim Boylan, legit, is the guy at the CDC saying, let's reduce the isolation period to 5 days, because you got to come in here and punch these clocks. I wanted to ask you, too, Trey, you know, you talked about, obviously, the Bulls. They haven't made the playoffs. The last time was 2017. And watching just this magical season so far this season reminds me a lot of when the Raptors took off with Kyle and DeMar in the 2013-14 season. You know, the Raptors had a lot of dark days and dark seasons before that. Just what's it been like just watching this team and just following along this season as they're doing all of this?
Well, it's a lot more exciting going into every game, thinking that you actually have a chance to compete. And lately, they just keep winning and winning. I don't think people realize that after that playoff appearance in 2017, up through the end of last season, the Bulls were literally the worst team in the league. They had the fewest wins, number 30 in the league, right behind the Knicks. So those were two teams that had been really struggling over 4 years. But with the Bulls, it was like they were never the worst team in the league, despite being the worst team in the league over 4 years. They ended up drafting fourth, Patrick Williams, in the 2020 draft. But other than that, just kept ending up getting number seven. Like, you can't put together a good team on the court, and then you can't actually bring in a high leverage player in the draft. So it seemed like they were stuck, but Zach LaVine honestly just kept working at it, made himself into a really good player. And then obviously at the trade deadline last year, Karnišević brought in Vooch, and that was kind of the game changer, because now the Bulls had two all-stars, which made them a lot more of an attractive place for a potential free agent to want to sign there. You know, I think when Anthony Davis signed with the Lakers, obviously, everybody knew he was going there, but he didn't even take a meeting with his hometown Chicago Bulls, because that's how far they had fallen kind of in the national media spectrum. So now they're playing an exciting brand of basketball. They're playing a surprisingly good brand of basketball. And I think that you're seeing the response on Twitter and in the media that people were excited for the Bulls to be a competitive, fun team again. You know, they're, for whatever reason, 90s basketball seems to be a little bit more en vogue this season. We're seeing more mid-range jumpers. We're seeing a lot of contact at the rim. So it only makes sense that the Bulls will be a competitive team this year.
Trey, speaking of the national media spectrum, I feel like I see a lot of reaction from Bulls fans and sort of pulling out receipts. Because let's be honest, the signing of DeMar DeRozan, even just the entire offseason as a whole for the Bulls, clearly in looking back, like, this was a fantastic offseason for Chicago. But at the time, it wasn't really rated in this way. So how much have you been reveling in sort of just maybe not saying like how wrong people were, because I think people had some reasons to doubt. I'm not saying I had no doubts either, but how much do you feel vindicated in the fact that the Bulls were completely right in almost every decision they made this offseason? Like, literally every move, even down to getting Matt Thomas, I think has been pretty good for them.
I knew I was getting a Matt Thomas on this call.
I had to sneak that in for Alex. Thomas. You know,
it wasn't even on the rundown.
Matt Thomas, anytime he misses, I'm like, what? This man went 99 for 100. He should not be missing any jump shots out there. But you're right, Will. Like, even down to when the Bulls and the Blazers and the Cavs did the trade that landed Markkanen in Cleveland and Larry Nance in Portland, everybody was saying, how come the Bulls didn't just get Larry Nance? Why did they take Derrick Jones Jr.? I think Derrick Jones Jr. has probably outplayed Larry Nance when they've both been on the court so far this season. I didn't think it was going to work this well. I thought bringing in DeRozan was going to be good because I'd watched how he had grown his game playing with the Raptors, kind of adding something new to his repertoire every single season. And then in San Antonio, he grew his game as a playmaker. So I thought it was going to work well fitting alongside Zach LaVine and Vooch. I didn't know it was going to work this well. I thought maybe he would bring some more free throws to the team. I didn't know it would be the only guy in the league who's still going to the line a million times a game. So the fact that they were able to cobble a defense together, number 11 in the league right now, and that's after playing quite a few games without Lonzo Ball and Alex Caruso, two of their best defenders, to still be a top 10-ish defense, I think has been super impressive. For me, heading into the season, I thought the Bulls' goal should be to make the playoffs, the straight-up top six in the Eastern Conference playoffs, because it was fun watching the play-in tournament last year, but I wanted the real deal. A pie-in-the-sky dream for me was a top four seed in the East, but now that almost feels like a given as long as they're able to continue to be this consistent. And with the way LaVine and DeRozan are playing and the way they fit alongside each other, I think it makes sense that they're going to be able to stick together through the rest of the year.
Yeah, before I let you go, Trey, too, you talk about these expectations. Obviously, they've changed now. Like, are you setting any goals for this team in terms of the postseason?
Yeah, championship ring number 7 is the goal at this point, I would have to say. If I'm being quite honest, I want the Bulls to be the Hawks of last year. They get a couple of fortunate breaks in the playoffs with the way injuries happen, with the way matchups happen. Maybe they sneak into a conference final. At the very least, I would love for them to host a game 1 in the United Center in Chicago so I can use my Southwest Airlines voucher, fly home, and see a game. That would be incredible. So making the playoffs is the real goal. Winning a playoff series would be awesome.
Yeah, no, that's amazing, man. Listen, enjoy the ride, man. I'm really jealous watching the Bulls put together this season, especially with DeMar. Trey, always appreciate you, man. We'll talk soon.
Yeah, sounds good. And thanks for letting DeMar DeRozan really thrive in Chicago. The guy seems to do well in red and black.
Appreciate you, Trey. Everybody should check out, obviously, the No Dunks podcast on The Athletic. Man, honestly, watching just what DeMar and the Bulls are doing, it does remind me a lot of that 2013-14 season. Because you remember, Will, like you know, you watch all those terrible Raptor seasons. And when you see a team turn it around kind of out of nowhere, like I wouldn't say the Bulls are doing this out of nowhere because they obviously signed a lot of players with the intent of winning. But, you know, I think there's like a sweet spot when a team enters that bit of a phase without, you know, any really like serious expectations, which is why like it did bother me a little bit. I think there some of the conversation around DeMar always centers around, you know, his shortcomings in the playoffs, and we've talked about it. You know, for me, you could save those conversations for down the line and really just appreciate what he's doing right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the only thing that rubs me a little bit wrong is that, like, he's obviously gotten a ton of love in Toronto in this local market. I'm not saying that everyone is happy all the time with DeMar, but I think almost every single person has universal love for the man because of what he did for the city, bringing the sort of franchise from the point where he inherited it, Chris Bosh leaving, him tweeting, you know, don't worry, I got us, and then literally, you know, following through on that front. Like, that's a journey that honestly, you know, you just have to respect, regardless of sort of what you thought about his game. And but I think on the national level, like, now that he's in a huge market like Chicago, like, he's really getting so much more love for, I mean, he's doing cooler and newer things, but also, as we talked about in the first segment with Wolfgang, like, there's a lot of stuff that he did in Toronto as well. Maybe he just didn't get that level of national adoration, but I think it's also just another reminder of, like, look, forget the national adoration for a second. Like, that's something for the players that maybe they value more, but you know, it's just another example where people, you know, watching the Raptors, you know, you always hear this complaint of, like, oh man, the Raptors don't get this love in the media. And it's like, yeah, kind of, they don't. Let's be real. You know, the Raptors in the States might have the profile of like Indiana in the States. What would you say in terms of, because, you know, you used to live in New York and stuff like that. And I, too, have visited the United States of America at various points in my life. What would you say?
I love how you just confirm you got stamps on your passport. Appreciate it, Will. Really appreciate it.
I've visited roughly 10 states in my life.
Listen, let's be clear. The story I always tell is like when the Raptors were playing the Cavs during all those years in the playoffs, there were Cavaliers reporters on Media Row who had no idea who any of the Raptors players were. Like at the start of the playoff series. So there's just not, you're right. Like there's just not that level of attention. And, you know, it's funny you mentioned that because I was thinking DeMar would be getting an even higher level of attention if he was doing this on the Lakers right now. And DeMar has been very open about the fact that he wanted to basically have a homecoming and play for the Lakers. And the business side of it didn't work out. I mean, we don't need to get into the details, but basically if you want to boil it down, I know it's more complicated than that. But the Lakers and LeBron decided to go for Russell Westbrook versus DeMar DeRozan. Like, that was really the choice that they made. And if you extend it further, we know that the Lakers were in conversation with the Raptors at the trade deadline last season where they could have traded for Kyle Lowry and then re-signed him with his bird rights. There could be a universe where Kyle and DeMar are on the Lakers right now, but instead the only former Raptor the Lakers get is Stanley Johnson. So there you go.
Oh, and they love him. By the way, I'm happy for Stanley. I'm really happy for Stanley. Just search Stanley Johnson Lakers and just read through some of the tweets. I guarantee you, you'll be a little bit amazed as to how much he's been appreciated there, which it's nothing against Stanley. I think he's playing really well. I'm happy for him to take the opportunity to get another chance. He really deserved it. But at the same time, the team needing Stanley that much reminded me of last year when I wrote a whole piece on, like, you know, the Raptors, you know, he's their secret glue guy. And I was like, okay, well, turns out they were the Tampa Raptors. So that you know, context does matter a little bit here.
Shouts to Stanley Johnson, but the Tampa Raptors had like 8 Stanley Johnsons coming off the bench last season.
You know what? DeAndre Bembry.
That's a Stanley Johnson type. Yeah, Paul Watson Jr., Stanley Johnson. Utah Watanabe put up Stanley Johnson stats. Who else, man? That was a Pat McCaw. Was Pat McCaw in Tampa?
Oh, yeah, Pat McCaw. Yeah.
Yeah, Pat McCaw, another Stanley Johnson.
But yeah, the Raptors have a type. They have a type, see, man.
Yeah, no, I guess Rondé was also confirming. Another Stanley. I'm still amazed at you confirming that you've stepped foot in the United States. I really appreciate that note, Will. Before you go, I know we only have a few minutes here, and you're such a well-rounded sports guy. You don't watch the Raptors. Is there anything cooler in sports than a buzzer beating three, like the ones that DeMar hit? Like, I was trying to think about that. The one I come up with was a hole-in-one in golf. I think a hole-in-one is super cool in golf.
Hole-in-one is there. You know, I would say walk-off home run, walk-off grand slam kind of thing is also really awesome. You get to stop the game. You get to, like, you know, do the little Gatorade shower. Honestly, a last-second goal in soccer is incredible as well.
I knew you were going to end it with soccer, man. All right, I'm turning off my mic. Appreciate it.
Well, I mean, listen, last year there was a very memorable moment where Alisson, the goalkeeper for Liverpool, literally came up out of the goal for a header on a corner kick and scored it, and like that won Liverpool that game, which has some other implications. But, I mean, that's also kind of ridiculous. I do love when the goalies come out, whether that's hockey or in soccer. But that's all the extra sports I have in me today. I'm your host, Will Liu, and you're listening to The Raptor Show, powered by DoorDash on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Make sure you find The Raptor Show wherever you listen to podcasts and subscribe, and please rate and review our show. Thanks again to my producer and co-host, Alex Wong, to our guests, Joe Wolfund and Trey Kirby, our board producer, Andrew Holland, and we will talk to you tomorrow.